listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to think about your day, not your diet. So let me ask you something. Do you ever wonder how to recognize hunger cues after years of fasting and dieting? Do you think only women struggle with binging or eating disorders? Maybe you want to know how to swap tired and hungry for strong and happy. Well, if that's the case, you are in the right place because my guest today on the Dr. Nina Show is Marcus Kane. He can cover all of this. Let me tell you a little bit about Marcus. After overcoming his own struggles with bulimia and eating disorder, Marcus fitness industry for people to enjoy training and find a balanced relationship with food without being subjected to a never-ending stream of flavor of the month diet and exercise plans. Oh, ain't that the truth? Marcus provides an avenue for people to get the most out of their relationship with food and training without being drowned in commercial diet industry noise. And he is joining us all the way from London. So welcome, Marcus.
Hi, Dr. Nina. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so glad you're here. So let's dive right in. Can you share something about your story? How did you get from struggling with eating disorders yourself to being in the position of helping other people in the way that you do?
For sure. So I can pretty deep anxiety surrounded body, anxiety surrounding body image through, you know, growing up around a lot of, you know, let's call it fitness industry propaganda, then a career in the music industry and constantly kind of being in the spotlight and everything like that, that exacerbated it quite a lot. And I wasn't able to find help. I really felt like I was the only guy in the world struggling. None of my male friends ever seemed to have the same problems. Anytime I tried to chat with anyone about it, I didn't feel like what I was saying was heard by anyone who could really resonate. So I just kind of kept it to myself and kept rolling. And eventually, after many years of dealing with issues in other areas of my life, I pieced together this road out of disordered eating and out of my eating disorder that was almost like a mosaic of different skill sets that I had to put together from other areas. And, you know, when it came to anything like, you know, health and fitness knowledge from a strength and conditioning perspective, rather than say a commercial dieting perspective, that was a big part of it. Even stuff like how I used to have to manage stage fright as a pro performer, that became something that was part of the puzzle. And yeah, I ended up just having to put this whole picture together and work from there. And then because I had such a roundabout time, kind of finding my way around, you know, finding answers and solutions, I then decided to create something that hopefully encourages other people to reach out and solve their own struggles with food.
Well, it absolutely encourages other people. Okay, if you and Marcus, the number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. We would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with any kind of binge eating, any kind of disordered eating, eating disorders, the real problem is not food, it's what's eating at you. And I know that lots of people are out there who have questions, and there are a lot of guys out there who are struggling, and you're here to help. So let's just dive into my first question, which is that how do you recognize hunger when you've spent years, sometimes decades, dieting and having a toxic relationship to your own hunger cues?
That's a really difficult one, right? Like, so many of us just diet on and off for so long and base our food decisions based on, you know, a book that we've read or the latest podcast that we've listened to or something. And we kind of lose our hunger cues. And something that I tell the people who come and train with me and work with me is that at first, it can be really disappointing to try and rely on your hunger cues right away. So almost like train yourself to eat a wide range of foods again at regular times, you know, without limiting food groups, without fasting. And then after a while of doing that, you will reestablish hunger cues in time. But trying to jump straight out of dieting into running everything based on hunger cues alone, it's usually, in my experience, a bit of a recipe for disappointment. And people need to not give themselves so much criticism when they might try to follow hunger cues and then find that it's really difficult or that they don't really find themselves in touch with them. So eating at regular times, reintegrating different food groups and everything like that, over time, your hunger cues will come back, but it can just take a bit of time and training and patience.
And of course, people, when they hear hunger, they sometimes don't know what that means. And that can mean, you know, your growling stomach, but it could also mean sort of lightheaded. Mm-hmm. I know when I'm hungry, I just lose my words. I can't talk. So it's like finding out for yourself, right? Like, what is your particular hunger cue? Because it can be different for different people.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely get the kind of not growling stomach, but that almost like a nausea, which is strange sometimes because sometimes the nauseous kind of thing that comes with being really hungry can almost discourage you from eating. So then you don't want to eat if you've hit that point, but what you actually need at that time is some more food. So I know that's definitely not something that everybody experiences, but that's definitely one of my kind of hunger cues, like one of my signs. If I've left it too long, I get very kind of like right in the middle of my body there.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned that as a guy, you realized that there were very little resources. And that's why you're out there now. Like, you are a resource for so many guys to understand that they are not alone, to get off the binge diet cycle, yo-yo dieting, all of that. What do you want guys most to know about the struggle?
Primarily that they are suffering, you know, talking about it. It's really, really common to have a guy tell me in our first session together that they've been dealing with some kind of eating disorder for sometimes upwards of 20 years without telling anyone. So before anything else, the main thing that we can really know about the struggle with that is that you don't have to struggle. Sometimes it's kind of seen, I know, like amongst us, like guys, it's almost like the more you struggle, the more credibility you have, like the more stuff you overcome, the more struggle you have to deal with. It almost feels like, yeah, like that's just part of being a guy, but it's just an unnecessary struggle and you don't have to deal with it. Like, your energy is better spent on other things, you know?
And there are all these, all of us, but particularly guys, get the message that somehow it's not manly to have feelings. It's not manly to have, you know, emotional reactions to things, and that you are strong if you can push your feelings away and you are weak if you have them. And so, you know, men in particular, in my experience, have that extra added layer of having to get through this societal prohibition. Mm. It's just being human.
Yeah, absolutely. I think different people and different guys especially, I see it all the time. Like, we all have different levels of comfort when it comes to, or different thresholds with how much we want to talk about our feelings. But sometimes I definitely found that acknowledging feelings was super necessary along the journey. Maybe not in the way that some people were trying to encourage me to do, but at the same time, suppressing them and pretending they weren't there was also very, very much not what I had to do. Like, I was doing that for quite a while, suppressing different things when it came to workload and how I was feeling at work and just juggling different things. And those stresses that went untalked about, unacknowledged and pushed aside, they ended up manifesting themselves as physical problems.
Can you say more about that?
So for so long, I was juggling a few different jobs and thinking that I should be able to do all of it on 4 hours sleep while maintaining the body of a pro athlete and sticking to all these different diets and everything. And I just kept pushing whatever I was experiencing, any news about how to hustle and just working and working and working and working. And then one day I was standing behind the desk of the gym that I was working at the time. I was simultaneously doing music industry work and fitness industry work. And I was standing behind the desk of this gym, and all of a sudden I started to get these crazy like heart palpitations. My hands started shaking, and it was like from the neck up, I'd trained myself to manage anxiety and to deal with things and to just keep on rolling. But it was almost like from the neck down, my whole body was just hit this point where it was like, I've had enough, stop, something needs to change. So that's how it really manifested for me. Like, I hit this kind of wall.
And you knew something had to change.
Yeah, something definitely had to change.
I think it was a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times, there was an article about bigorexia, which is very prevalent. I mean, for those of you who don't know, bigorexia refers to men thinking that they need to have bigger and bigger and bigger muscles, and that, you know, you just got to look like
So one of the guys out of the Marvel movies, you know, like you got to look like, Thor, right. You got to look like Thor always.
Yeah. Pardon? You got to look like Thor. You got to look like actually someone on steroids, I think. Right. It's just a completely unrealistic body image, but that so many guys think that they have to look that way. Is that something that you encounter in your work with men?
Constantly. Primarily early 20s, like teens, early 20s. It becomes sometimes less of a thing in guys once they reach their 30s and 40s. It kind of levels out a little bit, in my experience anyway. But the pressure on young guys to live up to these crazy, crazy ideals in regards to muscularity, it's insane, absolutely insane. The kind of bodies that, you know, that you would need performance-enhancing drugs to build. And all these young guys are looking at that going, I need to look like that in order to be a valued man, in order to be like a man. That's what I really need to look like. And, you know, I'm not saying at all that there's anything wrong with wanting to be in shape or wanting to take your body away. Like, conditioning coach is part of what I do. I love training, though there's a huge, huge gap between, you know, what we get from strength and conditioning training and then what some of these young guys are under the impression they need to aim for in order to be seen.
Right. It's the male equivalent of the anorexic mindset, which is an extreme, or that somehow the smaller you are, the better you are. That's if we're only talking about anorexia with respect to body image, which is far, far more than that. But the idea that somehow who you are and your likability and your acceptability can be changed by changing your body.
Yeah.
And with unrealistic ideals.
Absolutely.
Which kind of leads me to something else I know that you deal with a lot, which is body dysmorphia.
Yeah, it's something I, in my past, I had a lot of experience with that. You know, no amount of work I ever did. And full disclosure, like, I did experiment with performance enhancing drugs for a while in my 20s. No matter how hard I worked, no matter what I did, it was never enough. I could never hit the benchmark that my own mind was creating. And it took quite a long time to pull myself out of that. Though I know still a lot of guys are very, very critical of their appearance, and the expectation that they have in their head, or the image that they've got in their head. Again, there's nothing wrong with having goals, but it gets to a point where it crosses a line and you're dealing with reality being different to what you're actually seeing in the mirror.
And how, no, like, I need to be the Incredible Hulk, you know, to be, and I look like a little, like, nothing, where there's such a disconnect between what they see in the mirror and what they want to see. How do you help people through that?
With time, patience, and, you know, the company that we keep is a huge thing. The people that we choose to surround ourselves with, like, that's a huge factor. And someone has to want to move away from that. Someone has to be in a situation where that mentality and that situation is causing them enough pain and disrupting their life to the degree to which they're like, right, I'm ready to do what it takes to feel better. And that might be different for everyone. It could be any combination of, you know, cones. And I do my best to never say that there's one way to achieve any particular thing, because everyone's on their own journey. But primarily, people need to reach a point where they decide that they don't want to be that way anymore. And until that happens, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot we can do other than just be patient, raise awareness, lead by example, say that it's okay, you can come and chat if you like, and you know, leave that space open.
Yeah. Josh on Instagram is saying men aren't really that different from women. Exactly, Josh. We're all human and we're all getting these messages. And one of the messages we get is, hey, if you change your body, you change your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or that would be like, oh, I get bunch of muscles, or I lose weight and people like me more and I'm a different person and I get the job I want and the person I want. Like, wow, all you have to do is change your weight. What an amazing gift that would be.
Yeah. I mean, my goodness, it's so funny. I remember so clearly feeling that way, that creating a particular physique was going to be the answer to everything that I ever wanted in my life. And ironically, My girlfriend, like, we've been together for almost 5 years now. When we met, she was the general manager of the biggest gym in the city that we were living in at the time. And I saw her and I thought, man, oh, if I want to get a date with her, I'm going to have to get in such good shape. She's just constantly around all these, like, absolutely ripped dudes. Like Thor, she didn't care. It just, you know, I was putting in all this effort trying to get in extra good shape. She didn't care. It didn't matter. It wasn't the defining factor in my job, my career, my relationship, anything.
Yeah, because actually people want to do more than just objectify the person they're with and go, like, you know, how long can you stand around going, wow, you're really ripped?
Yeah. There's a finite time that you can spend doing that every day.
Yeah. Sooner or later, you're listening to what the aforementioned ripped person is saying. And if it's not very compelling, it doesn't matter how ripped they are. Who cares?
I agree. Yeah.
And of course, the same goes for women who think they have to look a certain way. We're all objectified a certain way. People will want us or love us or want to be with us, as opposed to embracing who we are, right? I mean,
yeah, 100%. Like, we put so much weight in our appearance that, you know, we think that that's going to that's going to toe the line. You know, we think that looking a certain way is going to take us 99% of the way there, you know, and it's just not.
Okay, let's talk about swapping tired and hungry for strong and happy. Wow, that sounds pretty good to me. How do you do that? Marcus, tell us.
So a little bit of sports science here and a couple of terminologies that everyone who's going to the gym should know. That, again, the commercial fitness industry doesn't really talk about this very often because they're pretty part in pushing what works and what keeps you in good shape. And of course, again, disclaimer, there are great gyms and great professionals out there, but too often people aren't given the information that they really need when talking about, let's say, their training straight out of the gate. The two terms that everyone who's exercising or training should know is maximum recoverable volume and minimum effective volume. Maximum recoverable volume refers to the amount of physical work you can perform and then positively recover from, so positively recover from without burning out. And minimum effective volume refers to the minimum amount of work you can do while still creating the change and the adaptation and steps in the right direction from a training perspective. And most people, when they jump on kind of new gym membership, they start out really strong and straight out of the gate with all the enthusiasm in the world, which isn't a bad thing. I admire enthusiasm, but people overshoot their maximum recoverable volume. So the amount of physical work that they're asking their body to do, they're not able to positively recover from. So that very quickly leads to symptoms of burnout, injury, and all that kind of thing, because we always think that more is better. But there is actually not a magic number, there's a scientifically proven volume of work that will be most effective for each individual. And that changes from person to person. And it might surprise a lot of people to know that a lot of high level, like elite athletes, train around their minimum effective volume, amount of work necessary to get positive adaptation and keep moving, while also minimizing the risk of injury, minimizing the risk of burnout, and making sure that they can show up day after day, week after week, month after month, and just keep training. So the transition from tired and hungry to strong and happy, one of the keys to that is definitely understanding those two terminologies and how they relate to you, maximum recoverable volume and minimum effective volume.
Makes me think about when I used to, my office used to be in a building where Krav Maga was.
I don't know if you've
in London, but yeah. So, and for a while, because it was in my building, I was, and my husband went and my daughter went and everyone went to Krav Maga. So I went to Krav Maga and there would be class before my class was that everybody in there would just be, they would be drenched with sweat. They would be red faced. They would come out gasping. I mean, and nothing ever changed.
Yeah.
I mean, I went for like a year and the same people looked the same the whole way through, or they would drop out because that's unsustainable.
Yeah.
And that you just explained really made a lot of sense when it, like, people who were maybe doing less actually got more benefit.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with visiting your maximum recoverable volume here and there. Of course, there's nothing wrong with challenging yourself here and there. Like, you know, that's fun. But light to moderate exercise, again, it's going to be more sustainable. It does produce a lot of really fantastic results. And also, it doesn't mess with your hunger cues as much as constantly training at really high intensity.
Right. Yeah, so there's so many ideas that we have about what is a quote-unquote good workout, which a lot of people think a good workout is you know, what I was just describing, those people who are red in the face and their hair is wet. They sweat so much and their entire shirt is wet from sweating and they're gasping like, oh, that's a good workout. Maybe that's not a good workout all the time.
Maybe not. No. Funnily enough, the way we use the word workout, I've heard a few fitness pros say this, but my girlfriend has talked about this with me a few times as well. Like, she's Polish. And in a few of those like Slavic languages, like Polish, the word workout doesn't exist. The word that they use in a lot of languages to describe what we would call going for a workout, they say practice. We're going to go practice. We're going to whatever. So our words, workout and exercise, it creates this kind of culture surrounding movement and exercise that implies that it's not a good training session unless you feel worked out. But again, a lot of elite athletes would say that after some of their best training sessions, they've still got a little bit in the tank.
On Instagram, Barbara is there saying she's Polish.
Was that correct? Was that right?
Yep. She said she completely agrees and that she is going to go to yoga later.
Nice. So, I love it.
No, saying that's right. No workout word in Polish. Yeah. Right. Workout. I love practice. I'm going to go practice.
Yeah.
And also, when you work out in the way, not in super intense way, you often get injured.
Yeah.
And that sets you back and it's a whole thing.
100%. I spent a lot of time during my commercial gym years when I was working in commercial gyms, the gap that I was filling in that arena, I guess you'd call it, was rehab trainer. I specialized in injury rehab and all that kind of stuff, and working with people to help them keep training through certain injuries safely. So yeah, injuries are really, really common and they're a buzzkill.
Yeah. My husband did martial arts from the time he was like 12, you know, put himself through law school by teaching martial arts. Martial arts,
cool.
You know, everything is Bruce Lee, martial art, whatever Bruce Lee martial arts was, that's the kind he did. And guess what? Last year he had to have a hip surgery and he said, are you a martial artist? I said, there's a show? They're like, well, your age. The only reason someone your age is having a hip replacement surgery is you've been a martial artist and you messed up your hip, which is true.
Well, that's a bummer.
Now he's great.
Is he okay?
Oh, yeah. He's better than ever.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, he was in pain for like 3 years. And I kept saying, get yourself to the surgeon. Now, I wish he would realize, like, I'm always right, right? So, no, he's fine. But that's an example of when you push yourself so hard. I have someone saying something in Russian. It's also practice. Carly Gash is saying it used to be practice. Yeah, that's lovely. I think I want to start.
I got to confess. I think someone else beat us to it. Trainer named Pavel Tsatsouli or something like that. He's done a lot of like strength and conditioning work over in the States. Like he definitely flies that flag of encouraging practice and treating these things like we're practicing something rather than we're just going out there to exhaust ourselves.
Right. Carly Gash is also saying movement. Like,
yeah,
movement. We're gonna move. So
that's a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Awesome, Carly Gash.
Do that for sure. Like, definitely, a couple of my clients call their training sessions, their whatever they call it, movement. I'm gonna go move. I'm gonna go this. Is some people who I work with have kind of finding their way back from a pretty destructive relationship with exercise. So a really set change surrounding it.
And there's also something sort of embedded in what we're discussing, which is this idea of it's you against your body.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, rather than, hey, I'm going to take care of my body and practice. I'm going to take care of my body and move. It's I'm going to, you know, fill in the blank.
Exactly.
Why is someone calling me on my... Okay, sorry about that.
It's all right.
So, what about that? Because that applies both to working out and to eating disorders. When you have a toxic relationship with your body, as opposed to seeing your body as a part of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as far as eating disorder recovery is concerned, the role that I play is often that I see will be maybe seeing a therapist at the same time, or they've spent a lot of time with a therapist, they've tried therapy, and they're now working with me to help implement some of the principles and some of the things that they learned. So yeah, I guess when it comes to the way that we approach diet, a euphemism that my dad uses just came to mind, but I can't say it because it's like there's a lot of swearing in it. But essentially,
you can say it.
Yeah. Well, my dad says, you know, if you're struggling, like if you're making something harder than it needs to be, then you're pushing shit uphill with a pointed stick. So, you know, and that's a very, like, my dad is this 70-year-old Australian. It's very much so. If we're making a diet or making our approach to food harder than it needs to be in a way that goes against the grain with our natural tendencies, it's always going to create kickback. It's always going to create resistance. And then the more resistance we create, the more space that leaves for other things to intervene, you know, whether that binge eating and then bulimia, different things. So yeah, often we, in attempting to kind of streamline our diet and use these very black and white approaches, it's just going against the grain and creating a lot of resistance while giving us the illusion that we're making things simpler, but we're kind of not.
Right. We're distancing ourselves. We're distancing ourselves from ourselves. The reason I'm looking down is I'm actually looking at your Instagram, which is at MK and Coaching. And it's very funny. It's a view with a reel. Say, you know, guys looking for nutrition guidance that doesn't involve keto, fasting, carnivore, or anything else Joe Rogan plugged. You say, bro, you got limitless options. Keto, carnivore, fasting, keto with fasting with carnivore, fasting with more fasting. F off. Exactly. Yeah. It just separates us from us instead of learning to cue into ourselves.
100%. Yeah. What do you think brings that about? Like the introduction of all these things, like, of course, like there are some people who do certain studies that think that they're really onto something when it comes to these different styles of dieting. But what do you feel? I feel like the information that I've found just kind of...
Money. The diet is a $60 billion industry, probably more. And people are motivated to come up with a new diet.
I agree. I mean,
some of these are very original. Like, I don't know. Not eating from dinner to breakfast is not called fasting. It's just called, you know, sleeping. It's not called intermittent fasting. It's actually called, you know, your night.
Yeah.
But these are just all ways to sell us on the idea that if we eat this but not that, then we're going to magically lose weight and then we're going to magically have the life that we want. And that's really the sad thing is, change your body, change your life. No, let's not really change our lives. Yeah. Okay. So you're also a nutritionist. So when people come in and they talk about dieting, how do you dissuade them from this notion of dieting? Because a lot of people are afraid to stop dieting.
Yeah. And again, it often comes down to that someone has to be ready. I'm not in the industry of changing anyone's mind. I can provide information. I can provide support. I can make some funny jokes about diets. I can create that kind of environment. But then it really does come down to the individual. Like in the early days of when I was coaching and working in the area of nutrition, I'd be trying to convince people of things. And it was just a huge, huge, again, pushing shit uphill with a pointed stick. It very much like when someone is ready, I'll put up my hand and go, 100%, let's talk. We can do something about that. Here are some options. Which do you think suits you best? So that's definitely the approach that I take there.
No, I'm just I'm remembering a support group that I used to have. And one time this woman came and she said, so wait, are you saying that I'm eating because of something going on in my head and my heart? I said, that's exactly right. And she said, how dare you? I'm a food addict. And she got up and she left. Okay. She was not ready for the message because it's easier for her to be a food addict and make it about food than it was to look inward, to think things she didn't want to think, to feel things that she didn't want to feel.
Yeah. That's a really difficult one. I think there was a conversation that I had on Instagram with someone who jumped on one of my posts, making a lot of noise about sugar addiction. And, you know, you and I could unpack that box for days. But at the end of the day, she was convinced and very invested in what she, I don't even want to say wanted to believe, I want to say what she needed to believe. So at that point, it's not the time, you know?
Right. Everyone comes to the change when he or she is ready in the way that he or she is ready. And again, I think it's easier to say, oh, that's the problem, rather than, again, feel things that you don't want to feel or think things you don't want to think and process things you don't want to go anywhere near.
Yeah. A client of mine just last night said to me that he ate a cookie that he forgive him or it rather than eating it to distract himself from whatever he was experiencing in that moment. And he said to me that it was the first time in many, many years that he had taken a cookie or taken a piece of food and just eaten it to enjoy it rather than eating it as a distraction.
Oh, that's so moving. I mean, well,
it's crazy. Like, I mean, the number of times I hear very similar stories and I get told those things from guys who are in their, 40s and 50s, they've been dealing with this stuff for like decades and just haven't had the space to just chat to someone about it.
What do you think will help guys feel for to change their mindset, sort of challenge the shame that goes along with the struggle?
I think it helps to know that there are options that really can be on your terms. Like no one, for example, I don't run group coaching programs because I know the kind of people who come to me don't want to share with other people just yet. They're not there. I think there's a lot of value in group programs, and down the track I will probably run some. But the people who come to me at the moment, most of them want to stay relatively anonymous. They want to have private conversations. They want to, work things at their own pace. And I do my best to make it clear from the very start that I'm not there to dig around in there. That's it's not my desire, nor am I certified to do that. That's therapy. That's a different thing to what I do. So what I do is very much work with things that people are ready to work with, take steps that people are ready to take. I do challenge people. I do offer a few different options for different ways forward. But I think knowing that your journey can really be on your terms, and there are multiple ways to go about it. It doesn't always look like what we might think it's going to look like.
never does it in any part of life, right?
Yeah.
What is that old expression? Man plans, God laughs.
Yep, yeah. That's it, 100%.
Okay, now switch, segue, just...
Sure.
Okay, how do models really get those ripped bodies?
Okay, so there's... There are some fun answers. There are some less than fun answers. Again, there are so many ways that that happens. To the credit of some of them are just genuinely hardworking. They love what they do. They love everything about that lifestyle. And they're happy to just live their entire life based around the parameters of their workout program and their diet. Like, you know, all their friends are in the same industry, all the, and that's okay for some people. That's really what they want to do. Cynical prick who just says, oh, you know, anyone who looks a certain way is clearly miserable and depriving themselves. You know, some people are genuinely happy, and but they're a very rare breed, very, very rare breed of person. Genetics plays a role. There is a lot, like the many, many people who say, you know, genetics has nothing to do with it. You know, it's all about hard work. And absolutely, someone who's genetically gifted but doesn't work hard isn't going to get anywhere. Like, of course not. Like, we're all, like, just based on the principles of biodiversity alone, we're all going to be physically gifted in different areas. For example, someone who might be a naturally gifted endurance athlete who tries to go and be a natural bodybuilder is going to struggle a bit. Someone has the one who might be, you know, like a natural sprinter. Like, you know, it's, I think when Usain Bolt won the 100 meters for the first time and was setting all these records and everything like that, I distinctly remember hearing an interview where someone was asked, you know, what do you have to do to become the fastest man in the world? And one of the answers was, you know, you got to choose your parents kind of carefully. Like, so genetics play a role. Hard work and genetics do play a role. Some people do it from a place of being fueled by misery and insecurity. You know, they genuinely believe that unless they look that way, then they're not worth anything as a human, and they will put themselves through many, many years of misery and awfulness in order to maintain a particular image. And, you know, they're on a pretty rough path. So some people do it that way. So some people do it from the perspective of, you know, they're working at what they want to work at. They're genuinely passionate about it. So they get those results. They're happy that way. Some people are just convinced that they're not worth anything if they don't look a certain way. So they're willing to put themselves through whatever they need to be put through in order to look a certain way. And then there's everything in between those spectrums. But again, there's also the performance enhancing drugs side of things. And for example, when I was using performance enhancing drugs, I got my hands on them legally. Like, it's through a particular clinic. It was very expensive to get them legally and everything like that. It's also very common for people to be using performance enhancing drugs legally now in certain countries, if you're willing to spend the money. And my experience of performance enhancing drugs was that they made it a whole lot easier to stay lean. I was not putting, you know, I was mindful of my diet, but I wasn't actively looking to become as lean as possible. And yet, after a certain period of time of just being relatively mindful of my diet and training relatively hard, I had a body composition that I'd never achieved before without them. And, you know, this isn't even talking about anabolic steroids. I wasn't even using the higher end, like the, you know, I wasn't using anabolic steroids. I was using a couple of other things. And my experience there was, yeah, they definitely made it easier to achieve and then maintain a particular body. people are doing it. At what cost? Yeah. For myself, the cost was, you know, rolling the dice. You know, if I stayed on them, obviously I was on them for about a year and then stopped because I thought, you know, I don't want to be on these things long enough to just see what happens. But the reality of those drugs and any of the drugs that people are using to alter their, you know, physical appearance, we don't really know what the long-term effects are. Some people try making a big deal out of the dangerous short-term effects to try and scare people away from using performance-enhancing drugs, but there are too many people out there who are able to use the right dosage and have a doctor help them and everything like that and be seemingly okay for that to be there anymore. So think of it this way, like if there's a young lad at a gym and all the lads like 5 years older than him, there's like, you know, a group of them that are all using PEDs and they're all not experiencing any side effects. No matter what the authorities say about the use of performance enhancing drugs, that guy's going to look at his friends and say, well, I trust my friends. But the reality of it is the risks are more about the long-term effects. Anyone who does that stuff and uses it, you just don't know how your particular body is going to respond in 5, 10, 15 years' time. Could be one of the lucky ones who seems to make a lifelong career out of steroid use, and we know who they are. I don't need to say their names. Or you could drop it.
Yeah, and ultimately, like, the goal is to what? Have the perfect body for what? So that you feel good about yourself. There are other ways that are less risky and more long-lasting to feel good about you, body and mind and soul. Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Marcus, this has been such a great conversation. Please tell us where people can reach you. Tell us about your podcast.
Sure.
And anything else you want to say.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina. You can find my website at mkanecoaching.com. So that's Kane spelt K-A-I-N. My Instagram is the same name. So mkanecoaching, M-K-A-I-N on Instagram. My podcast, I've kept it all relatively consistent. So you don't need to remember a bunch of different things. So mkanecoaching.com. MKane Coaching on Instagram, and there's the MKane Coaching podcast.
Tell us just a little bit, because we have just a little bit extra time. Can you tell us just a little bit about your podcast?
Sure. So my podcast, I started it with the intent of just doing a few episodes to put some information out there that's essentially the information that I wish that I heard when I started my fitness and dieting journey. And that's how it started. And it kind of just kept growing. People seemed to enjoy it. So I kept creating episodes. And I think it's the whole idea of the podcast is to, even at the stage where they want to reach out and have a chat to me or anything like that, they might be too self-conscious. They're not ready to have a one-to-one chat with someone. They just want to, in their own time, in their own space, have a listen to something that talks about things from a slightly different perspective and hopefully makes them feel like they're not the only one in the world struggling with this stuff. So it's very much designed to be and written and produced and released with that in mind. Because I very much understand that although I'm saying drop me a line, of course, I do work with people one-to-one, message me questions if you like. Not everyone's ready for that, you know? So again, especially the people that I work with, sometimes they follow what I do for like 12 months before even saying hi. Like, you know, it's really important. The podcast is there as a free resource that people can listen to. I do my best to put valuable stuff in there, valuable information. And just so that people don't feel like they're the only one in the world struggling with this.
And I think that's exactly what you did here today on this show. So thank you so much for sharing your experience, your knowledge, your like lovely attitude towards change. And I am so glad that you were able to join us today all the way from London. And so thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Definitely check out Marcus on Instagram, on his podcast, on his website. And when you are ready, reach out to him. As you can see, he's going to help you a lot. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show. I am here at Wednesday at 10 a.m. Here on LA Talk Radio. So you can listen live here or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts and take good care of yourself. Stay curious, not critical. I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.